Today we're going to be in Jude chapter 1, moving our way slowly through the book. And we're going to take the first part here in only two verses. I want to start by saying here that the video we were supposed to watch had to do with the drawing of what's called a composite sketch. It's a classic sort of technique that has been used in the field of police investigation for a long, long time, whereby they, with the best of their recollection, a victim or an eyewitness will describe to an artist in as best detail as they can remember the visual aspects of the criminal, and that it might be sketched out with pencil or charcoal on a piece of paper so as to circulate that among the community and help to identify an unknown criminal. Why do I say that? I say it because this is precisely what Jude is doing for us this morning in verses 12 and 13. He's going to sketch a portrait for you and I. A portrait of those spiritual criminals who threaten the life and the health of God's people in the church. Now last week, before we get into this week's text, we looked at three notorious spiritual criminals in Judeo-Christian history: Cain, Balaam, and Korah by name. And we learned something about this issue, that each of those men are strongly represented even in the contemporary church. Though they died thousands of years ago, their spirit is alive and well even among us. So let's review. Cain. Cain was the first person in human history to reject God's plan of salvation for one that he came up with on his own. And as I said, his spirit is alive and well in the contemporary church. He was religious, but disobedient. He did whatever he wanted in the name of worship. There have been many people since him that have made the same mistake. They're just like Cain. If you remember the story of Cain, people like him compete against their brothers for God's praise by trying to outperform them. And then they become enraged with a murderous hatred with their brothers when God doesn't buy into their scheming. You'll meet people like this from time to time. You'll also meet Balaams from time to time. Who is Balaam? Biblical history reveals to us that Balaam was a man who only served God because of the personal benefits. And the modern church is no stranger to these types. They come around for no other reason whatsoever than to improve their own life, even at the expense of God's people. They take and take and take and suck the life out of the church and leave us to ourselves. And then there's Korah. Korah was a man who, simply put, wanted glory. Just like all of his spiritual descendants do in the church today. Their ego is so swollen, they think that they're just as qualified to lead or to advise others or to counsel as those whom God has specifically chosen and equipped to lead. And so without God's endorsement, and without the church leadership's awareness, they gather together as many naive people as they can, and then they create their own fan club. This is precisely what Korah did. And when they lead, it's with a spirit of rebellion. They lead all right, but they don't do so in the right way. And when they counsel, people get hurt. If you know the story, every single individual that ever took counsel from Korah died just like he did. So too in the contemporary church. Those who followed these slick egomaniacs end up just like them. They're swallowed up by the world, and we never see them again. It's interesting when Jude brings up these three individuals because I can look personally over the course of my involvement in the church for the last 15 or so years, and I've seen Cains, and I've seen Korahs, and I've seen Balaams. I still see them today. I've seen them in other churches. I've seen them in this one. We need to know who they are if we're going to be protected from suffering the same fate as they did or from being hurt like those around them were. So Jude is going to do us the favor this morning of sketching a portrait of these men and women. Let's read in verse 12. He says, "These are spots in your love feasts while they feast with you without fear, serving only themselves. They're clouds without water, carried about by the winds, late autumn trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots. Raging waves of the sea, foaming up their own shame. Wandering stars, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever." Okay, I'm going to stop there. He's given us five attributes that are common to these types of people. So let's begin with the first one there. They're spots in our love feasts. Now, common to the early church were what is called love feasts. We read about that here. And the point of these feasts was to digest, not food primarily, but to spend some time digesting the teaching of the apostles over a meal, a shared meal. And this was the common practice of the early church. In Acts chapter 2, verse 42, it talks about the very genesis of the church and how they continued in the apostles' doctrine and in the breaking of bread, among other things. And so they would make a pretty much a daily habit of learning the Bible and then eating together, no doubt discussing the things that they had learned. But there were some, according to Jude, and if we're paying attention even today, that are only here to feed themselves. Whether that's spiritually or physically or both, there are some who are here for themselves only. Their primary objective, and believe it or not, even in coming to church, is to obtain carnal pleasure. Not spiritual satisfaction, just carnal pleasure. And this is seen in the fact that they observe these love feasts without fear, Jude says. They do this without fear. And so the things even that they're learning in the scriptures have no lasting effect on them. The truth does nothing to arrest their attention or to stir their soul or to alter their course of life, but lunch does. These types of people are purely sensual. They follow suit with those in the Old Testament who, quote, "eat and drink and rise up to play," end quote. Fun, food, material things, temporal pleasures are a higher priority for these spiritual criminals than to be nourished by God's truth. And so this becomes an identifying characteristic of those that we're to be careful of. Paul says their God is their belly. What a silly graphic illustration that is. I mean, nobody really worships their belly, but in truth, that's precisely what's happening. Well, folks who have such a disinterest in the spiritual aspect of church life tend to be kind of dangerous to have around. Jude here calls them spots. I don't know why it's translated spots here in this version, but in other translations, it might be better rendered hidden reefs. They're rocks in the water that you can't see near the shore. Close enough to the surface of the water that any ship sailing by is going to be ripped up underneath. They're small enough to go unnoticed, just like people in the church. Small enough to go unnoticed, but big enough to do real harm. They have the potential to sink the church, or at least do enough damage that we never really sail very far because we're constantly doing repairs. You follow me? There are people that will come through the doors of this church that stop the progression of the church because they do damage. I believe that people over the course of Christian history have actually, like this, sunk entire churches, caused them to close the doors, have done such damage by way of division and scandal that they have caused the leadership to cave and that the doors were subsequently closed. The first century church had love feasts, among which people like this became hidden reefs or spots that sort of ruined the whole thing. Jesus Fellowship Duluth has retreats and campouts and conferences. And they're there. Undetectable. Just beneath the surface. He says they're like clouds without water. So adding to the rough outline of the sketch that Jude is drawing for us, we add this detail. They're clouds without water. Now, if you follow the theme of rain throughout Scripture, you're going to find that it's often spoken of in a positive light. That's because the Bible was written in Israel. Israel is an arid country and depends on rain for life. And so, when Jude says that these people are clouds without water, he's saying they're clouds that look like they're supposed to rain, but they never do. They just blow on by and they disappoint everybody. People like this come through the church. They had all the promise in the world and they have nothing to show for it. They got people excited. They had great potential. They were on our prayer list. We hoped the best. They showed some enthusiasm, and they wanted to get involved, and they learned how to say the right things. And everybody was really, really excited, but nothing ever happened. They disappeared. And we're all left disappointed. Boy, have we seen our fair share. And I don't know about you guys, but speaking personally as the pastor, somebody come through the door, And I don't really think too much of it. But they come back a second week, and I'm like, oh, they came back. And then they stick around, and then they want to get involved, and they ask about service, and I'm like, whoa. Well, maybe we got something to work with here. Of course, over the years, I've become a bit of a skeptic. Because I've seen so many clouds without water sail through this church that now it really takes a lot for me to get excited. I'm sorry. You want a service application? So what? You want to sing on the worship team or go to a retreat? That's actually a bad sign nowadays. It's like, oh, great. I've seen too much. And these people, Jude indicates here, spoil it for the rest of us. They're spots in your love feasts. They know how to rain on a parade, so to speak. They know how to ruin the fun. They know how to dim everybody's light. They know how to disappoint the best of us. We've seen these kinds of clouds, haven't we? We've run into these hidden reefs before, haven't we? And it just does nothing but discourage the church. It was just really a shame because when somebody truly, sincerely, with the right heart, comes along wanting to serve, I'm like, you know, sure, but I'm going to make you wait. Well, can I go on a missions trip with you? No. You're too new. I have no choice. I can't let you. I simply can't do that to the church. I don't trust you. I don't know you. You want to serve around here? Okay, but I'm going to watch you closely, and I'm going to make you fill out an application, and I'm going to read your application and draw conclusions based on how you did in that application. Were you thorough about it? Or did you treat it like it was just some hoop to jump through? Do you have a background? What kind of a person are you? It's my job to protect the church from waterless clouds and hidden reefs. I have that responsibility. And hidden reefs that came along well before you ever showed up just made it harder for you to ever get involved. Sorry. But if you want to play the same game they did, you're going to make it harder for the next guy. Clouds without water. He says they're fruitless trees. Late autumn trees without fruit, twice dead, pulled up by the roots. That doesn't sound good at all. I don't know if I want those kinds of trees around my yard. Late autumn, still no fruit. They're not just dead. They're dead, and pulled up by the roots. Okay, let me ask you something here. What good is that? I think Jesus has the answer. He'd say they're good for nothing other than to be gathered together and burned. And I would say amen to that, but I hesitate for fear of coming across as being eager to see people go to hell. But at the same time, I understand the degree of frustration that these people bring to the fellowship of God that makes me inclined to say amen to... They're fruitless. Their lives never produce the visible evidences of true salvation that God says they will produce. And we've been looking all season. It's now late autumn and there's still nothing. They've been around for a long time and they still produce nothing. They've been around a long time. Jude already said, hey, these people crept in long ago. So let me say something. There's going to be people that have been at the church for a long time and still produce nothing, nothing of real value. So if you're new around here, be careful of looking to somebody who's been around longer than you have as if they have it together. As somebody who's been married longer than you have, as if they have it together. Somebody who's served longer than you, as if they have a Christian longer. Just because they've been around longer doesn't mean anything. If anything, it could suggest that they're more dangerous than anyone else. Pay attention to what their life is producing. Are they a wreck? Are they all over the map? Then they shouldn't be your example. Jesus calls these fruitless trees tares. If you know anything about tares, they look just like wheat. Now, wheat in the Bible is good, but tares are bad. And Jesus says, you know what, wheat, they're like the Christians, and tares, they're like the non-Christians, and they always mix together. You find Christians and non-Christians in the same church, but the non-Christians have a way of presenting themselves in a way that looks identical to true Christians. And they grow up alongside true Christians. And truth be told, they cause no direct harm to true Christians. But who they truly are, the unbelief that they truly have, isn't manifested until harvest time. That's the real difference between tares and wheat. They look the same until you go to harvest them, because tares never produce kernels of wheat. But you wouldn't have known it. You wouldn't have known it in June. You wouldn't have known it in July. Only at harvest time. All too late, the church realizes how harmful it was to have these people around for so long. Because you know what they were doing the whole time? Stealing nutrients from the wheat. We don't know who they are. That's why Jesus says, don't pull them up. Just leave them. He says, I'll take care of this at judgment. So they add no real value. And this is going to sound harsh, but I believe that it's true that some people do nothing more than take up space in church. We are on mission. We are here to serve and to glorify God. And those who play pretend simply aren't doing that. They're holding up the mission and mocking God. Jesus goes so far as to say that every tree that my Father didn't plant will be uprooted. I believe God uproots those that He didn't plant in order to make space for others to grow. I've seen Him do it. I bet I'll see Him do it again. Because they will find their way in. Jude says, these are spots. These are dead trees. They are there. They crept in long ago. He says they're raging waves. They're raging waves. Anybody drive down to the water in the last couple days? Of course, I studied for the sermon, and when I'm looking out at Lake Superior all churned up, I can't help but think of Jude and what he wrote about these individuals. And I'm watching these waves just crashing, and just it's just brown out there, all the mud and muck churned up from the waves and the wind. And I look out there and I think, that's some Christians. Some pseudo-Christians. Some people who would say that they're Christians. That's them. So just, these people, they're busy. They're active. Let's put it that way. But for all their busyness, nothing really gets done. It's amazing. They could be working at the church 24/7, and it's like their life still goes nowhere. I've seen some people work their fingers to the bone doing things for the church and with the church, only to, in the end, hate the church and abandon the church. That's like spending 3 years building yourself your own luxury home to live in, and as soon as you finish laying the last tile, you light the thing and burn it down. Hello? That's not what you do. But some people are busy with no real objective. And so, just as true as it is that you shouldn't trust somebody just because they've been around the church longer than you have, neither should you blindly trust somebody just because they do a lot around here. Sometimes people who seem to be doing a lot are really doing nothing but agitating everyone else with their busyness. They're actually a bit pharisaical. I don't even know if that's a word, but you know, Pharisee-like. They're all works. There's no relationship with Christ at all. But they're extremely religious and very active. They're never resting, like waves of the sea in a storm. All the activity they do, it never really blesses anybody around them. It burdens people, if anything. Like a sailor lost on the waves of an ocean during a hurricane, these people steal peace and calm from the church. They just make it a not nice place to be. Isaiah chapter 57, verse 20 says, the wicked are like a tossing sea, which cannot rest, whose waves cast up mire and mud. And you are going to see people come through the church. And again, Jude has already given us four characteristics that are really starting to fill in the portrait so that maybe in recollect, you're starting to go, yeah, I've seen people like that come through. Or maybe you're looking right now and going, oh. And so he's got a fifth one, and with this, he's going to sort of darken in the shadows and really snap the picture into focus for us. He says, they're wandering stars. Wandering stars. Stars don't wander, actually. They're in a fixed orbit. They're not supposed to wander. If a star is wandering, something's wrong, or it's an airplane. It's not a star at all, right? So if it's wandering, you got to wonder, if an individual fits this bill, well, then they're not a Christian. They're not a star in a fixed orbit. And so what kind of an individual are we speaking of here? We're talking about somebody who's aimless in regard to God's will. They're clueless. They don't know what God's will. They take a stab at it here and there, and they never know. There's no orbit. They're never locked in to the orbit that we could call God's will. They're all over the place, and they're unpredictable. Something I know about wandering stars, or shooting stars, if you will, is that they're bright. They kind of make you go, ooh, but they're also very temporary. Like after the ooh is over, like they are impressive for a little bit, but after the ooh is over, they disappear into blackness and I don't know where they've gone. They were impressive for a while, but where did they go? And it's impossible to get any spiritual direction from people like this. Because they don't even know where they're going. One commentary says there are, quote, worthless navigational aids, end quote. If you're looking to them for help, for direction, they're not taking you anywhere. They're going to frustrate you. They're going to lead you into darkness. Following them is only going to get you lost. This is Jude's point. He's going, be careful of these people. Contend for the faith against these people. Like, stand in the truth as opposed to these people. And beware. Beware of these people. And again, this may sound harsh, but some people are just terrible to have at church. And I don't think I just said that in as much as Jude already did. Jude is so strongly implying that these people are terrible to have around that I don't think it should come as a surprise that I just said what I said. He's like, there's spots in your love feast. They're like hidden reefs. Is there any sailor out there that like sees that as a good thing? Yes, I love those. Yeah, they're great to have around, those hidden reefs that rip up your boat. Yeah, they're like they're fruitless trees, twice dead, laying in your yard without even, they're disengaged from the ground altogether. There's no even potential to bear fruit anymore. Is there anybody in the farming industry that's like, I love plants like that. I love orchards. I gotta, you know. Jude's going, I just can't stand these people at church. And yet God's people have always had to put up with them. Nothing's changed. We will too. They're going to be found here, so be on your guard. Okay? I say this to warn you. Be careful of these people. Learn how to recognize them. Jude just gave us a portrait whereby we could. And we need to learn to recognize them by face, if you will, because they never come in here wearing a name tag. Nobody comes to church and goes, yeah, I'm a Cain type. Yeah, I'm a Balaam. So be careful of me. No, they're going to get involved and deceive everybody. So now let me ask you a question. Now that you've seen the sketch that Jude has drawn for us, could you pick them out of a lineup? Can you spot them? If they were in a small group, could you pick them out of a crowd? I hope so. Because you know why? They're extremely dangerous. They're dangerous, and our church is not exempt from having their company.